Well, good evening. It's good to be here again with you this evening. Appreciated that devotional and that touching story. And the practical points that were shared about love, and it fit very well with, I believe, with some of what I'm going to share with you tonight. I've enjoyed being here with you this morning, and seeing some old familiar faces. So, thank you for your hospitality, and we've enjoyed being here with you. The subject tonight, the great importance of the lesser commandments, taken out of Matthew 5:19, and we will read that verse. This point, Matthew 5:19. Whosoever therefore shall break Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Now, there's a fair amount in that verse we could look at, but the thrust of tonight's topic is, what is the importance, what is significant about those least commandments mentioned in this verse? The importance of the lesser commandments. What are these lesser commandments? I'm curious if you had to answer that question, if you would know what it's being referred to. What are the lesser commandments? I'll give you a little historical context on the Jews' laws. The Jews had the main set of laws, commonly referred to in the Bible, we call them the first five books, the five books of Moses. That's what the Jews would have had as the law. They also had, out of our text, if we jump back to verse 17, he refers to, he says, "Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets." The prophets were another part of, we call them the prophets in the Old Testament, but it was more of their studies that they referred back to as important teachings that they would have held under the law, under those first five books of Moses. And they had some other teachings as well, but then you kind of get down to the bottom, and these religious leaders that were somewhat in focus here also had a whole list of rules that mainly the scribes and Pharisees, they had the whole list of rules, and these were known as fence laws. So, which one of those, what category are we pulling from the least of these commandments? And my first point is not the Pharisees' fence laws. And I'd like to talk about that a little bit because they get referenced throughout the Bible at different places. Jesus confronts some of them, and sometimes it may get a little confusing about what he was talking to as far as when he was addressing the Pharisees and the scribes living the law or some of their laws. And I found an interesting little article on this. The Pharisees were the false religious teachers who constantly opposed Jesus. There were 613 commands in the Old Testament law, but the Pharisees created over 1,500 additional fence laws for the people to obey, and they believed the best way to keep the people from breaking God's law was to add a protective barrier around the law, basically to spell out the cans and can'ts, the do's and don'ts, even though the Lord had never commanded them to do this. The people of Jesus' day were burdened down by man-made legalistic rules that God had never commanded. And Exodus 20:10, or for an example, it says, not to work on the Sabbath day. So the Pharisees created 39 types of prohibited work so no one would break the law. And here are some of those fence laws. You could not spit on the Sabbath day because it would disturb the dirt and you would be guilty of plowing. You could not swat a fly on the Sabbath day because you would be guilty of hunting. A woman could not look at her reflection because she might see a gray hair and pluck it out, which would be also be doing work. But in all these fence laws, they also created some loopholes to get around them. If your house was burning down on the Sabbath, you could not carry clothes out of it. However, you were allowed to put on several layers of clothes as the house was burning down. Then you could leave without breaking the law because you were wearing them and not carrying them. One more, you could not travel more than 3/5 mile from your house on the Sabbath. However, you could leave food 3/5 mile from your home on the night before, which would then make it permissible to travel twice the distance without breaking the law. I guess you could go get the food. I'm not sure how that worked, but the point is they made loopholes and figured out how they can cheat the system. Were these rules, is this what Christ was talking about when he mentions the least commandments? You know, I think these examples we look at give us a window into the legalistic culture that Jesus was dealing with. And we have examples where he did not support these fence laws. In fact, he often directly challenged them. In Matthew 15, verses 1 and 2, then came to Jesus scribes and Pharisees, which were of Jerusalem, saying, why do thy disciples transgress the tradition of the elders, for they wash not their hands when they eat bread? Now, what they were referring to as properly washed hands typically entailed washing with closed fist, which doesn't even really make sense, but washing with closed fists to prevent one palm from polluting the other. And vigorous diligence demanded washing up to the wrists. Others, in the name of total and complete thoroughness, would go as far as the elbows. If one washed up to their elbows, there could be no doubt about the cleanliness of their hands. Jesus confronted that. His reply in verse 3 there, he said, but he answered and said unto them, why do ye also transgress the commandment of God by your tradition? And he goes on to challenge them about how they've dismissed laws. They've ignored things that were taught specifically. And so again, yeah, we could look into that more, but he was not, I believe it's pretty clear, he was not supporting these fence laws. That's pretty clear. So what may have he been referring to? How many of you know what the least commandment or the least of the laws was in the Old Testament, in the books of Moses? What was the least? You don't have to raise your hand or answer, but there was an understood least commandment in those laws. And that's in Deuteronomy 22:6-7. I'm going to read that in the Amplified. It maybe makes it slightly clear. But if you happen to come upon a bird's nest along the road, in any tree or on the ground, with young ones or eggs, and the mother bird is sitting on the young or on the eggs, you shall not take the mother with the young. You shall certainly let the mother go, but you may take the young for yourself, so that it may be well with you and that you may prolong your days. So this was pretty much accepted as the least commandment in the law. Why? What made this a lesser commandment or the least commandment? What made a commandment heavier great, heavier light? That's referred as well. Was it the consequence or the reward of the commandment, of following the commandment? So the consequence of eating something unclean was you were then unclean until the evening. And I'm not sure, I guess once the sun went down, then you were clean again. I'm not sure how that all worked, but that seems pretty light. You know, there's kind of a consequence for the rest of the day. Okay. The consequence of murder was the death penalty. Well, that's pretty serious. That's a pretty heavy consequence. But it's kind of interesting to look at this bird nest commandment and what was required. Well, you simply had to chase the bird off the nest and then you get the eggs and or the young. If that's what I'm not even sure why they wanted that, but maybe they ate them all. And your reward for obeying and honoring that commandment was prolonged days. You really didn't have to do much, and you got one of the greatest blessings out of the law. You got prolonged. You were promised prolonged days. It seems a pretty light law with a pretty significant reward. Or we could look at what was the cost or the effort associated with doing the commandment. And like we looked at the bird nest law, it was pretty light requirement there to fulfill that law. And I, as I studied, I found a messianic write-up on this, and I'll just read you this. They do have some funny words in. Maybe I'll translate some of them, but it can be argued that some commandments are easier to keep than others. For example, in the days of the temple, if an individual wanted to bring an offering, they had to pay the price of the korban, or they had to pay the price of the offering. They had to, you know, they had to shell out a pocket for the offering. Even today, without a temple, there are many laws that necessitate a financial loss. For example, the purchase of the talit, or a prayer shawl, or the Bible, Jesus talked about phylacteries. And those are little pouches that they wore, I believe, on their wrist and on their forehead, that had little scrolls in they could pull out to read. So you had to buy those to fulfill the law. The hosting of an Erev Shabbat meal, that's the Friday evening before the Sabbath, or sponsoring a wedding or bar mitzvah. And that's the meal celebration of a 13-year-old boy coming to age of responsibility. And these laws require investment. They require time and money. And they take a little more effort than simply getting eggs out of a nest or, you know, that you happen to walk upon. And in this regard, some of those laws are heavier, or, you know, laws in light of the cost of them up front may be considered heavier or lighter depending on what needed to be invested to fulfill them. So with that little bit of background on some of these lesser laws and some of these things. What was Christ actually getting at? What was he saying? And I think it's generally accepted that his point when he was talking about this was all of the law is important. And in light of being obedient to God, if God gave a law, then even a light one or a lesser one is important to fulfill in our obedience. To be obedient to God, you know, a little, yeah. We can be obedient, breaking a big one or a small one if we're not fulfilling them. And so part number two here, God wants obedience from our heart. So adding rules to the law did not make the religious leaders perfect. In fact, Jesus exposed the scribes and Pharisees' legalistic hearts and who they really were in Matthew 23, 27 and 28. He says, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but are within full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. Even so, ye also outwardly appear righteous unto men, but within ye are full of hypocrisy and iniquity." I'm pretty certain the Pharisees walked around in their day thinking Jesus had nothing on them. They were the picture of fulfilling the law. They were culturally accepted as the holy and righteous men of their day. And they, I think they believed inside, they had all these fence laws and they were so well inside, they couldn't even get close to breaking the law. They were just so so within the law, they were just about perfect. But following our text verse in starting in Matthew 20, Jesus starts to expose this faulty view. And he starts in Matthew 5, 20. He says, "For I say unto you that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven." Exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. Really? I wonder what went through people's minds when he said this. Like, how could you get better than them? But Jesus called them out. He said, he basically said, they're not good enough. Jesus made it clear they were not measuring up to what God was looking for in men. And he goes on to give six examples in the following verses. And we're gonna touch on those. And a lot of my thoughts and comments on these come from the KJV Study Bible. But in the first thing there in verses 21 through 26, he says, "Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not kill." And then he goes beyond this outward demand of the law and by stating, "Whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause is in just as great danger of judgment as a murderer." For anger is the emotion and inner intention that leads to murder. So we see he lays down one of the laws and he exposes the Pharisees and the scribes' inconsistency in the way they were living and translating it. And number two, verses 27 through 30, "Ye have heard that it was said of them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery." And Jesus goes beyond this outward command to reveal that its act is the result of an inner attitude of lust. "Whosoever looketh to lust characterizes the man whose glance is not checked by holy restraint and results in impure lusting. The act would follow if the opportunity were to occur. By taking his listener beyond the outward statement of the law to its real intention, Jesus was trying to get the listener's attention off the physical law and onto the spiritual application. The third one, verses 31 through 32, it hath been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. And Jesus said in Matthew 19:8, Moses, for the hardness of your heart, suffered you to put away your wives. And he explains that Moses' allowance was not intended to be taken as a license for divorce, but as a possible solution in the event of moral unfaithfulness. Number four, verses 33 through 37. Again, ye have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shall perform unto the Lord thine oaths. To forswear means to swear falsely or perjure someone's self. Oaths in the name of the Lord were looked upon as binding, and perjury of such oaths was strongly condemned by the law. But by the time of Christ, the Jews had developed an elaborate system of oath-taking, which often formed the basis of actual lying. In other words, there were stages of truth and thus also stages of falsehood within the system of taking oaths. All such oath-taking, Jesus announced, was unnecessary if one were in the habit of telling the truth. Thus his command was, swear not at all, let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay. When you say yes, make sure that's what you mean. When you say no, make sure that is what you mean as well. Mean what you say, say what you mean. Number five, verses 38 through 42. Ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. The principle of retaliation was common in the Hebrew and Near Eastern law codes. The judicial penalty of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth is stated in Exodus 21:24 as a means of ending feuds. However, Jesus is clearly saying that this is not a license for vengeance. The Savior's point is that we should resist not evil. And evil here is seen as not as a state, but rather as the action of the evil ones or the malicious ones. And it represents the evil and sinful element in man, which provokes him to an evil act. Jesus shows how the believer should respond to personal injury. He should not attempt personal vengeance, even through the means of the law, to compensate for a personal injury. And he goes on to give five examples of how believers should react to unfair and unreasonable treatment. In retaliation to physical violence, he said to turn to him the other cheek also. Man's natural impulse is to strike back, but the disciple is not to be a natural man. He is to overcome evil with good. Romans 12:21. There is no greater example of this ethical truth than the life and death of Jesus himself. Jesus lived out that turn the other cheek, resist not evil. And the last one, verses 43 through 47. Ye have heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. The law of love, sometimes called law of Christ, summarizes the ethical principle of the Sermon on the Mount, love thy neighbor. But the unscriptural addition of hate thine enemy was a popular concept in Jesus' day. The admonition, love your enemies, is one of the greatest statements Jesus ever made. The love enjoined in this passage is love that originates from God himself. Man is not commanded to attempt to love his enemy on the basis of mere human affection, but rather on the basis of love that comes from God. The quality of love commanded here is expressed by giving. Bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them that persecute you. Loving your enemy involves doing good towards that enemy in order to win him over to Christ. And we saw that in the devotional here tonight. Jesus gave these six examples to show how the scribes and Pharisees were avoiding or misusing what God actually wanted in their lives. what he had actually tried to teach him through the law. In other words, these religious men were trying to check all the boxes of doing the law, but they were breaking the commandments in their hearts. And if their heart was not in tune with what God's desire for the law was, then obviously they were not able to fulfill the law properly. Luke 6:45 says, "A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. For of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh." And we can paraphrase this and say, what's in the heart comes out. And that's true both in our words and our deeds, our actions. The Pharisees were more concerned about their appearance before men, making it all look good, while inside they were proud, greedy, selfish. We call them carnal. Jesus called them whited sepulchres, clean on the outside, but full of hypocrisy and iniquity inside. So now we've spent some time looking at the context of how the Jews viewed the commandments and how the religious leaders, they got it all twisted up through legalism. And Jesus called them out on it. And how can we bring this home to us? And point number three, obedience from the heart will obey the least commandments. Are we tempted to obey God today like the Pharisees tried to obey God? Are we tempted to look good on the outside but miss the weightier matters of the heart? I'd say we are. Do we have fence rules? We kind of do. But I believe the problem in the fence rules is when they become a legalistic line that we gauge our Christianity off of rather than our actual relationship with God and the church. And people can see, the temptation is that people can see if we're checking the boxes of the fence rules, right? Just like the Pharisees. And if you're checking all the boxes, then you're doing good, right? Not necessarily. There's a part of us that likes to just check that box off, that we're doing the right things, and then feel smug about our Christian life. You know, if you wear the expected traditional clothing, maybe black pants and white shirt Sunday morning, and you come to an evening service, and you go to Wednesday evening prayer meeting, you're doing the right things, you're putting money in the offering, you drive a Honda Odyssey. Maybe you serve on the school board, you're really getting up there. You know what? After a bit, you're doing all the right things. And you're doing pretty good. And for us, those fence rules usually are a good guide in our lives. But it, like I said, it's easier sometimes to gauge our lives off that instead of actually looking into our hearts and asking, how am I doing with the weightier matters? How am I doing with brotherly love? How am I doing with obedience to God and the church? How am I doing with humility, with purity in my thought life, with honesty in business, taxes, even self-inventory at council? Do I know how to be honest? Am I being honest? Looking at the aspect of true love for God, we have the commandment, or Jesus called them the greatest two commandments in Mark 12:30, "And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment, and the second is like namely this: thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Is my love for God clear? Is it flowing out of my life? Is it obvious? Is my love for God and my neighbor being manifested? The religious leaders knew this law. They knew the laws. And we would say they completely struck out on it. Jesus made it clear. The source of their love was, well, he said in Luke 20, verses 45 through 47, "Then in the audience of all the people, he said unto his disciples, beware of the scribes, which desire to walk in long robes and love greetings in the markets and in the highest seats in the synagogues, and the chief rooms at feasts, which devour widows' houses and for a show make long prayers, the same shall receive greater damnation." These scribes, they knew the greatest commandments. Yet somehow they missed the fact that they loved themselves more than God and their neighbor. The heart and the relationship to God that needed to fulfill those two laws, it was missing. They appeared religious, but they were obviously, they loved themselves. And today we have those two great commandments. So if we understand them, we read them, right? We live them. Or are we like the Pharisees? I had to wonder, what might that verse say if it was written about us today, the condemning one I just read about the scribes and Pharisees? And maybe I shouldn't do this, but I paraphrased it, and for whatever it's worth. "Beware of the Mennonites, which desire nice things and like to appear as religious, but in their wealth they love on themselves and forget that they are simply managers of it for God. They will be judged by how they have wasted what they were given." And I'm not going to say that's for all of us. But I do reckon with the fact that we have been given a lot, and we are more responsible. We are very responsible for what we've been given. And how are we doing with that loving God with our heart and loving our neighbor? Just a challenge. Am I investing into the kingdom? Do I value the example, Christ's sacrificial example that he gave us? Who do I really love? Lastly, why are the lesser commandments important for us today? Because 99% is not good enough. Well, we'll look at James 2, verse 10. "For whosoever shall keep the whole law yet offend in one point, he is guilty of all." Now, to be clear, we say, well, no one here is perfect. No one here can achieve perfection in trying to live a perfect life for God, right? And yet, the difference is, after we give our heart to Christ, if we knowingly allow or make room for that little bit of carnality to live in our hearts, and we refuse to address it when it comes to our attention, who are we fooling? Are we any different than the Pharisees or the scribes and Pharisees? Looking good, but unclean on the looking good on the outside, but unclean inside. How much of, just name anything, dirt, poison, anything, can we put in this water before it's not fit to drink? Not much at all. And yet, you'd only put a little bit in there and 99% of it's still clean, right? But it's worthless. And I believe that's kind of how our heart, our life appears before God when we hang on to something in our carnality, and yet we try to live a religious appearance, and before God, and yet there's something wrong in that heart. Because John 14, 15, he says, if you love me, keep my commandments. And I believe true love equals true obedience. And it's not, again, it's not that we will be perfect in 100% perfect, but it's a heart that is in tune, and the trajectory is towards perfection. It's a commitment towards perfection. It's a direction of travel spiritually that's headed towards Christ-likeness. Is your trajectory clear? Is it clear where you're headed? Is your love producing commitment and obedience? What do people say about your life? I wasn't sure if I was going to share this story or not, but we have an elderly neighbor man. He's 80 years old. He claims to be agnostic, which he doesn't really believe in God. And yet we were talking, my wife and I were talking with him one day, and I had a pretty straight conversation with him about Jesus Christ and being right with God and recognizing his maker. And he had rejected it. And yet he was commenting to my wife how he just appreciated how she just seemed to be happy and free. And he just thought she's a very special person. And I agree. And she told him, it's because of what Jesus Christ has done in my life. And he said, you know what? I can see that. A man that professes he doesn't believe in God. Praise God. So closing this up, chapter 5 closes with verse 48. He says, be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father, which is in heaven, is perfect. So as we press on in our high calling towards perfection, towards greatness, as he says there in our text verse, who shall do and teach them shall be called great. As we press on towards that, may we see the importance of these lesser commandments. You may kneel for prayer.